He had, David thought dully. He'd paid and paid. He knew now that there could be no restitution. He didn't know how long he sat there before rousing himself to go upstairs, check on the others. Reach out to Foster, that bastard, and see what the timeline was for Kelsey's body to be released. The tedium of planning a funeral would lend focus to his days, force him to move forward. If he moved fast enough, long enough, maybe he could escape the desolation. He poked his head into the family room, then walked through it to the kitchen. Didn't find Janie. Opening the door that led to the garage, he saw her car was gone. That was unusual enough to have him frowning. There was no way she'd be working. Maybe Claire knew where she'd gone. He closed the door and headed to the stairway, meeting Marta halfway as she made her way down. The woman had been hovering around Claire since the news broke. Averting her eyes, she brushed by him. As he finished his ascent, he heard the sound of the coat closet opening. Moments later, the front door closed. The door to the master bedroom was ajar. David paused outside it, steeling himself to deal with his wife before pushing it wide, and stopped in his tracks. "Claire, what are you doing?" Suitcases were everywhere, both garment bags laid across the bed, bulging and neatly zipped. Claire was crouched beside one bag, but at his arrival she stood. Still in her pajamas, he noted dimly. "Packing." He took a deep breath, reached for reason. You're emotional. We all are. But it's not a good time to be making decisions like this. Besides, where would you go? She walked toward him, stopping a few feet away. With more life in her voice than he'd heard in a long time, she said,
"I'm not going anywhere, David. You're moving out."
Special Agent Mark Foster, November 21st, 1 p.m. "You're a busy woman to get in to see." Mark followed the nurse, pushing Betsy Graves' wheelchair down the hallway and into her hospital room. Betsy smiled up at him, and he was struck by how much younger she seemed in the last few days, despite the long, dyed gray hair framing her face. Freedom probably had that effect on people.
"Looks like your dad and sister must have gone out for a bite,"
the nurse said chattily as she wheeled the woman to the side of the hospital bed and helped her into it.
"That's the last test for the day, although the gal'll be around in an hour or so for more blood work."
Betsy rolled her eyes and nodded, reaching for the iPad sitting on the table. Her family had brought it with them when they'd arrived the afternoon after her rescue. It had been an invaluable method of communication, as the woman had laboriously typed a statement and all her answers to their interview questions. She'd never speak again, her doctors had agreed. Luther Sims had almost killed her when he'd come home one day and heard her shouting for help. Her vocal cords were crushed. Someone, probably her sister, had brought her pink silky pajamas to wear instead of the patient gown. Maybe she'd understood what a luxury they would be to a woman who had been relegated to wearing only the garments her kidnapper chose. Betsy typed something painstakingly on the tablet and then handed it to him. "Where's your sidekick?" He grinned and pulled up a chair. "Agent Medford headed back to London this morning. I have a few more loose ends to tie up." Sloan had left before Mark had spoken to Whitney. The girl's revelation about Sims's statements when he'd attempted to strangle her had lent a whole different slant to the man's past, and things had been moving at warp speed since, especially for a weekend. He'd been on the phone half a dozen times with the BCI profiler Greg Larson and Sack Bennett. "Your statements have given us real insight into Luther Sims." Her expression darkened at the name of her former captor, like a light abruptly extinguished. "They've actually driven our investigation into his history." He'd forwarded copies of Betsy's statements to Larson. They made for difficult reading. Decades of emotional and physical abuse as Sims's wife. She'd faced numerous surgeries on her hands and feet, which had borne the brunt of his torture. And it was after years of his failed attempts to impregnate Betsy that the next kidnapping had occurred, starting the longest string of serial homicides in Ohio's history. It was all tied up in the man's warped idea of family, Mark had told Larson. But whether the man was recreating something he'd lost or something he'd never had remained unanswered. until he'd spoken to Whitney this morning. Now he was here seeking verification. I need to ask you one last question, at least for now. Betsy nodded grimly, her mouth a firm, straight line. I want you to remember back to a difficult time, when Luther Sims choked you and nearly killed you. Do you remember him saying anything as he did so? In what seemed to be an unconscious movement, one of her hands moved to her throat. Her lips quivered, and she bowed her head. Her fingers remained motionless on the keyboard. But just when he thought she wouldn't answer, she began to type slowly, one key at a time. When she was done, she held the tablet out to him. Damn you, Margaret. Always you disappoint. A quick lick of adrenaline up his spine was tempered by the haunted look in Betsy's eyes. I know that was hard, he told her. But with your help, we're going to put him away for the rest of his miserable life. Mark stepped into an empty hospital waiting room to take the incoming call.
Where are you?
SAC Todd Bennett demanded. Still at the hospital, Betsy Graves just verified Whitney DeVries' story. Sims said much the same thing when he attacked her, calling her Margaret.
Call them both by his sister's name. Have you shared that with Larson yet?
It sounded like a lumber wagon was going by the room. Mark checked the window to see an orderly pushing an overloaded laundry cart. I just texted him. Any updates since the last time we talked? Bennett gave him a rundown of the events of the last few hours, ending with,
Sims is being transferred Monday.
That was news to Mark. The plan had always been to move Sims to a more secure jail location in Franklin County with in-house medical care. But from the way the man's doctors had talked a couple of days ago, that time was at least a week away. That's a welcome development. The man had been out of surgery for 2 days, and between over-concerned hospital staff and the man's steadfast refusal to speak to anyone, no one had gotten a word out of him. Several from BCI had tried, Mark included.
I just got a call from one of the guards we have stationed at his room. Sims has been asking for you for the last hour. Only you. He made that clear. You ready to take another run at him?
Anticipation raced through him. It would be a pleasure to hit the man with everything they'd learned that day. I just need to go out to my car to get the recorder.
You do that. And Mark, we've already got him wrapped up pretty tight. Put a bow on it for us.
Foster. Mark pushed Sims' hospital door farther open and walked into the room. Luther, I hear the operations were considered successful. The man looked stronger than he had a day out of surgery, but heavy bandages showed beneath the hospital gown, swathing his torso and shoulder. Mark guessed the man's thigh was dressed similarly. The links manacling one of his wrists to the bed rails jangled as he raised a hand, making a dismissive motion. They say there will be some permanent damage. His tone didn't indicate interest one way or the other. There was a certain satisfaction in seeing the man in chains, much the way he'd secured his victims. As much satisfaction as he got from looking at the 2 wounds Whitney DeVries had inflicted on his face a week earlier. He was hoping they'd scar, leaving the man with a permanent reminder of his sins. Mark had left his coat and weapon outside the room with the guard stationed there. He set the tape recorder on the small table between the bed and a straight-back chair. He turned it on, stating the date and their names. Sims's mouth twisted.
You aren't going to need that. This isn't an interview. I just wanted to ask you a question.
Okay. And then you'll answer one of mine. Ignoring Mark's response, the man said,
What happened to David Willard?
He went free. You admitted to planting DNA on his daughter's body to incriminate him. It's the reason you changed dump sites. It's even why you chose to place her in a body bag instead of exposing her to the elements. You wanted to make sure the DNA didn't erode or blow away. He pulled out the chair and sat. It's why you put the necklace in the bag. You wanted Kelsey Willard found and ID'd.
I didn't admit to anything. You fabricated that, and there were no witnesses to our conversation to prove otherwise.
That was true enough, Mark silently acknowledged. But the word of a current BCI agent weighed a lot more heavily in a court of law than that of a former one who'd been found with a badly abused missing girl locked in his basement, another kidnapped victim confined in his bedroom. There was a break-in at the lake house 3 years ago. That's when you hid the body, isn't it?
It's obvious that Willard attempted a copycat crime. He deserves punishment.
There was a glitter of hatred in the man's gaze.
Men who betray the trust of their families don't deserve to have them.
He'd said something similar once, Mark recalled, at their first meeting, that all the victims had a parent who was deficient in some way. After long conversations with Larson, Mark realized the talk was all part of the man's rationalization for a decision he'd already made when he'd selected their daughters. Using his own twisted logic, he was rescuing the girls from his perceived failings of their parents. But there was more at work than that. Paraphilia often had its roots in childhood, and Sims's childhood had apparently had some very dark corners. Maybe so, but the law doesn't always provide for punishing people's bad choices.
So flippant.
Sims pressed the button that would raise the head of his bed more, wincing at the changed position.
The man's a liar and a cheat. Ask him about the lake house and how he used it to meet up with that young realtor he was banging. While you're at it, ask him about the time Kelsey followed him on her bike and walked in on the two of them.
Mark struggled to keep his face impassive, but something in his expression must have given him away. Sims gave a nod.
You swallowed every line of BS he spun, didn't you? He gave her money when she threatened to tell her mother. $1,000. What kind of man hangs that kind of guilt on his kid for something he did?
A shitty father, Mark allowed. A cheat and a liar. But then again, you lied too, didn't you? About being at Berlin Lake when Whitney DeVries was kidnapped? Clever to leave the SUV out with the canoe on top, even though there was plenty of room to park it in your double garage, a garage where they'd found a black van matching Kelsey's and Whitney's descriptions. Between the DNA they gathered from the basement and that van, Mark hoped they'd be able to tie several more victims to the man. David Willard isn't the criminal here. You are. The cord in Sims's neck was visibly throbbing. Coupled with his heightened color, he looked to Mark on the verge of a heart attack.
He lacks moral fiber. A man capable of deceiving and betraying his family is capable of any number of things, some of them surely illegal. Do your fucking job, Agent! I guarantee if you dig into Willard's life, you'll discover a law that's been broken. Then make him pay.
Larson had been right, Mark realized slowly. DeVries had as many skeletons in his background as David Willard, but it wasn't Whitney's father who was the focus of the former profiler's rage. It was Kelsey's affection for the victim. It'd been difficult for Mark to wrap his head around that, but surely it was one reason Sims despised Willard. Sims had wanted to cast blame on Kelsey's father and increase his suffering. His hatred of the man was fed by his own feelings for his captive. Besides Betsy, you kept her the longest, didn't you? Sims pressed his lips together and looked away. Long enough to start to consider that she was yours, right? She was special. Everyone says so. Pretty, clever, engaging. You were everything her real father wasn't, and she should have loved you, not him. Unconsciously, Mark leaned forward in his chair, certainty fueling his words.
Family. That's important to you.
He had Whitney's recollections of her conversations with her kidnapper. They had Kelsey's writings, Betsy's statement.
What kind of family life did you have with no father figure in it?
A single mother would have been scandalous nearly 70 years ago. Maybe a single mother who was forced to abandon her dream of dancing for the New York City Ballet was resentful of the child who caused that. They were still searching for relatives who might be able to fill in some blanks on Sims' childhood.
Is this an attempt to analyze me?
You're out of your league, Foster.
Maybe he was, but Mark sensed he was also on the right track. And then along comes a sister. Still no father, so there's just the three of you. But your mother isn't so resentful anymore, because now she has a daughter to mold into her own image.
One she can teach everything she knows about dance. One who might achieve the dream your mother had to abandon.
We're done here.
Margaret wasn't really your sister. Half, right? Sims glared at him.
Family is defined by more than blood. There's shared duty and obligation, a commitment to the common good.
So how old was Margaret when she defied that commitment? Mark sat back with feigned nonchalance, hooking one ankle across the opposite knee. What was it? Boys? Teenage rebellion? Or did she just stop paying attention to her dance lessons?
Dance is an important tool for teaching the merits of discipline. It requires total focus. Margaret ran away because she was spending too much time thinking about a young hoodlum she'd met at school.
Bet that was hard on your mom. The man stared at Mark stoically. Probably harder yet when your mother discovered that her daughter hadn't run away. You'd killed her. Sims reared back as if Mark had landed a blow. Maybe you didn't mean to. Could be when you choked her, you were just trying to teach her a lesson. But she died. And then you hid her body somewhere. Not in Wayne National Forest that time. No, not that first time, but somewhere close to home. We got a warrant a few hours ago for your old home place. I'm guessing they'll find her body in an old well on the property, a barn. Perhaps you buried her. But even as we speak, they're getting cadaver dogs ready to search the place. I'm certain they're going to find Margaret, the sister who disappointed you so.
Turn off the recorder. We're done here.
Sims pressed his call light. A moment later, the door to the room swung inward and one of the officers stepped inside.
I want him out of here. Summon my doctor. I'm feeling dizzy. Faint.
Sure, I'll go. Mark stood, but made no move toward the tape recorder. But don't you want to ask about Elizabeth first? Sims froze. What attracted you more to your first victim, I wonder? The fact that she bore a resemblance to your mother? Or the fact that she danced and bore her name? Elizabeth. But everyone called her Betsy, didn't they? Betsy Graves. The man's lips were moving silently as if in argument. Finally, he muttered,
"She's my wife. We met after my mother died. It was love at first sight. Elizabeth adores me. I've taken care of her."
That's obsession, not love, Mark thought. Possessiveness, not affection. And a sadistic level of rage when met with less than total obedience. "How do you take care of her, Luther?" he asked, not even attempting to keep the disgust from his tone. "By surrounding the cabin with motion detectors that would alert you if any of your captives escaped? Or disguising her so she'd look your age? By breaking her fingers for the slightest infraction? Smashing her feet with a hammer the one time she tried to run away? Or by choking her so hard she'll never speak again?"
"That's not true. None of it."
Mark walked closer to the bed, bent over the man lying in it.
"It's true. Every word. Elizabeth, or should I call her Betsy, wrote it all out for us. She's in this hospital right now, receiving treatment for your years of abuse.
She told us how you'd tell her each girl was a potential daughter for you both, to complete your family. But all ended up disappointing you, right? The same way Margaret did."
"She didn't tell you that."
The man seemed sure now.
"She would never disobey me."
"Then why do you suppose she threw those things the night I came to see you? Mark pressed on inexorably. First the book, and then she unscrewed the light bulb to smash. She was trying to get my attention. She'd finally worked up the courage to defy you and risk it all one last time for escape. Sim slowly clapped his hands, a derisive sound of applause.
That is quite a story. Unfortunately, you can't prove any of it. I've got Betsy's written statement and Whitney DeVries's testimony.
It would be all they needed to put this psychopath away for good. Mark wasn't certain he believed in an afterlife, but if one existed, he hoped that somehow Kelsey Willard knew her killer would be punished, that all the other girls he'd murdered could feel a measure of vindication for his capture. I think all your victims would enjoy the irony of you spending the rest of your life in a cage.
I saved them!
The man roared, sitting upright, a vein throbbing in his temple.
I gave them a real parent! I gave them purpose!
Mark nodded at the guard, who'd pushed open the door to investigate the outburst. The man slowly faded into the hallway again. In other words, you were the father you never had, and Betsy would be the mother you wished yours had been. 14 victims. It was an effort to keep the rage from his voice. Lives lost, families shattered forever, sacrificed to one man's delusion. But two survived. They're all we need to make sure you'll never feel the sun on your face again. Sims fell back against the bed as if suddenly exhausted.
I'm still holding all the cards, Foster. You think you have undiscovered victims? Guess who can lead you to them?
Mark snapped off the recorder, picked it up, and prepared to leave. Sims's voice trailed after him.
Imagine the publicity if the BCI puts its own interests ahead of the families of those poor girls. The state attorney is probably writing my plea bargain as we speak.
The taunt followed him as Mark pushed open the door and started down the hall. There might be a kernel of truth in Sims's claims. Everyone wanted to provide closure to the families of crime victims. But the man was insane if he thought he'd skate on any of his offenses. Eschewing the elevator, he opted for the stairs. One step at a time. That's how they'd build the rest of the case, and that's how he'd fix his marriage. It was Saturday. Bowling Green was only a couple of hours from Columbus. He could stop by headquarters in London for an hour or so, and then be on his way. Surprise Kelly and Nikki. And when he and his wife put the boy to bed, they'd go somewhere they could talk, just the two of them. Mark headed toward the exit of the hospital. He didn't fool himself that the upcoming meeting would be easy, but it was a start. He pushed out of the hospital doors and walked rapidly across the parking lot. The weather had returned to a relatively balmy 40 degrees, too warm for the winter jacket he wore. He switched the recorder from one hand to the other as he shrugged out of the garment. It would be a long time before he forgot the names of Luther Sims's victims, longer still before their faces would stop haunting his sleep. Young girls who'd had their dreams stolen from them. Girls who would never finish school, fall in love, have children. But Mark figured the best way for him to pay homage to the victims' lost futures was for him to stop screwing up his own. At least, he was going to do his damnedest to try.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Pretty Girls Dancing by Kylie Brandt, performed by Luke Daniels, Emily Sutton-Smith, Lauren Ezzo, M. Eldridge, and Dan John Miller. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc., all rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.